is it that we find ourselves surrounded by such complexity, such elegance?
The genes of you and me,
the genes of you and me,
we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.
Hello, you're listening to DNA Today, genetics podcast and radio show. I'm your host, Kira Deneen. On the show, I explore genetics and how it impacts our health, usually through interviews with genetic counselors, researchers, doctors, patient advocates, and more. This episode, I'm joined by two of my peers in the Sarah Lawrence Human Genetics Master's Program. So thanks for coming on, guys.
Hi.
Thanks. Hi. My name is Catherine Mayo. I went to UC Davis and majored in genetics and genomics. And then after that, I worked for a little bit in pharma and biotech at Genentech in the Bay Area before coming to Sarah Lawrence.
And I'm Alejandra Cantú. I actually have a medical background back in Mexico. I studied medicine in Mexico. And then I worked in a hospital for a couple of years. And now I'm here.
And now we're here. And we're sitting here. We're going to be talking about the movie Gattaca, which if you haven't heard of it, I'm shocked. It's really a staple in genetics. And we're going to talk about how things have changed over the last 22 years since it was filmed. It came out in 1997, so it's the anniversary of it coming out, and there's just a lot to talk about, so we're going to try and pack in a lot in a half hour here. So before we jump into it, we wanted to recap for those that watched this maybe a long time ago.
Yeah, so I'll just read the kind of recap of the plot, which is Vincent Freeman, played by Ethan Hawke, has always fantasized about traveling into outer space. But he's grounded by his status as a genetically inferior invalid. He decides to fight his fate by purchasing the genes of Jerome Morrow, played by Jude Law, a laboratory-engineered valid. He assumes Jerome's DNA identity and joins the Gattaca space program, where he falls in love with Irene, played by Uma Thurman. An investigation into the death of a Gattaca officer, Gore Vidal, complicates Vincent's plans.
I think it's interesting that it says purchase the genes of Jerome Morrow.
Right.
When you read that, I was like, aren't we talking about his genome here? It's not like, oh, I'm just going to take these
genes. A few of the genes. Yeah.
So when we all saw this, we've seen it a few times in our life. When did you guys first watch this? Like, at what point in your careers, I guess?
Well, the first time I saw it, I was like 13, 14 years. I was 14 years old, and I had no idea about genetics or genes in general. I had like a very abstract idea of what it was. So for me, the first time I saw it was pure science fiction. It was something so far in the future. Like, it didn't seem something that would be possible in like near, like 1 or 2 years from now. Like, no, like it was totally it seemed very far away.
And that's probably what a lot of people were thinking when it came out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was purely science fiction. And then as I grew older and I got to see it again, and I think I was in med school when I saw it again, you get a little more stuff about it. You understand it a bit more. But it still seemed like, okay, they're talking about things that I understand, but the technology itself and the way it's used in the movie, it just didn't seem that it was something that I would have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And now here we are, and it's here. And it's, I mean, not exactly as the way it's portrayed in the movie, but we're seeing it happen. So that's mm-hmm. really interesting.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Catherine?
For me, the first time I saw it was in high school. And so I was also probably 15, 16. It was in my biology class, my intro bio. And it was specifically during the ethics section, which I think is very relevant and on point for this film. During that time, we talked a little bit about what bioethics was and what it meant to be right or wrong, or the things that we were doing. Like Ale said, when we were talking about it, it seemed like this was really hard to imagine it in application. Mm-hmm. But the way that my high school teacher brought it in was by talking about Oscar Pistorius, who, for those who don't know, was trying to compete in the Olympics using prosthetics for his legs. And so the way he made this a much more real concept for us was we're already really kind of amplifying what it means to be human. And is that wrong or is it right? And we had a big discussion about it. So I know back then for me, ethically, this was fascinating, not mm-hmm. just from a bio perspective, but to understand what this meant for society, really.
It does span out to that point of it's not just about like the genetics and what we're technologically able to do, mm-hmm. but all the impacts. And we'll kind of get into all of that and everything. I also saw it in high school, and I think I was required to watch it in, like, three different classes because I was, like, taking so many science classes as a senior. And it was really interesting to watch it back then, and I just remember my mind being blown and certain things at that point. This was, what, 2012, 2013, certain things had already come true, and my AP bio teacher was, like, already drawing parallels. Like, when this was made, they didn't know about this genetic technology, and now we have it, and now, you know, what is it, 6 years later, it's even more true. So every year we have, it becomes much more accurate.
For you and me, we really watched it almost 10 years after it came out.
True.
So it's a good point to think that we were already seeing stuff happening.
Yeah, because when it first came out, that was when I was 13, 14. So it was really science fiction.
Much more science
fiction. It was much more science fiction. And that was, it's interesting to see how it has evolved over
And I wonder what the writers think about it of when they were creating this back then and then looking back at it and they're like, we kind of predicted the future a little bit.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So do you think that some of the things that are happening in the film would stand up to our current technology? I'm thinking of, like, the opening sequence where he's exfoliating so that he doesn't have his own cells being shed at Gattaca and everything, and the finger prosthetic, I guess you'd call it, the blood sample in it. Like, would that work today? Like, would he be able to get away with this today, I guess?
I don't think so. I mean...
Really? See, I was going to say he would.
Really? No, yeah. I'm just saying, one, I don't know. I guess, like, who knows? But it would be really weird that every day at your job, they were going to these lengths. And that's, I think it's part of the movie, taking it to the extreme of, like, taking it there. I think he would be able to get away with it, but not because of, like, the technology itself, but because maybe they wouldn't be so strict about it as the movie portrays it to be.
You think they'd only, like, maybe test him once and be like, okay, you're Jerome Morrow, you're all set.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what I like about that scene is the fact that they're showing you the extent to which you have to go.
Yeah.
If we're talking about shedding your DNA, every part of you has your DNA in it.
We're doing it right now, so, sitting here.
Yeah, I'm doing it right now. So I do not only think that that's, like, a great scene, just cinematically showing the length that he's going to.
It's not the camera.
Right, right. But just, that we can genotype you by blood. We can genotype you by saliva. We can do forensics on your hair. These are things that we've been doing for a long time.
Yeah, that's true.
And so in 1997, that not only was a very realistic thing, but I do appreciate that they're kind of getting the point to you that none of you is safe. If we're living in a world where genotyping, they have the technology to do that on almost any sample from you, then I think they do that well.
Yeah.
Do I think that we can truly, you know, do wide-scale genomic analysis of all of these things that he's shedding? No, I don't know about dead skin cells, but to be fair, I'm also not in forensics or
neither of us
field,
are.
So, yeah.
But I mean, spoiler alert, his eyelash, he went through all that process and was just scrubbing and it was like one eyelash. And
yeah.
True, and like that screwed him over.
And that's
basically
all it takes.
It takes.
So, yeah, even though he goes to all these great lengths, like, he still kind of gets found out to some extent.
Yeah.
And I think we could do spoilers. It's been 22 years. I think we're good.
Sorry.
Okay,
it's all good. So how accurate do you think they predicted, like, the traits of an embryo? There was that scene where, I almost said Jerome, Vincent's parents are sitting there and they're looking to conceive their second child using what we would call, like, PGD and everything like that, or PGT. There's a lot of different types out there.
Mm-hmm.
Do we think that this is kind of accurate to, like, what it is today? Because back in 97, they weren't doing it as extensively as is offered today. It's a big question.
Yeah, it is a big question. But, I mean, with all the testing that's done, even with 23andMe, we always talk about percentages. And I think they do mention it as a percentage. So that's realistic in a way.
They would say, like, 85% risk of heart failure by this age.
Exactly.
Those kind of statistics.
So I think in that way, it does mimic a bit of what we're getting into right now.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean...
To me, this is one of the most poignant and relevant scenes in the entire film. Because when you think about the direct-to-consumer genetic tests that are coming out today, last month, a few months ago, in the last year even, so much of in vitro fertilization, IVF, and all of these technologies that are coming out have to do with, like Ale said, these percentages or really likelihoods of developing a trait. And so what I liked that the film did was they did offer things not as black and white, but by saying, mm-hmm. you know, this is the likelihood. I think they quote around 80-something percent that mm-hmm. Vincent, the main character, is eventually going to get heart disease and die of it by the age of 30. So nothing that they...
And he had already outlived that stat? I don't know
right.
how to say
It's hard to tell. We don't fully know in the film, but absolutely
But it was alluded to a little bit. Yeah, he had already outlived
yes.
what his expected
yeah, yeah.
was.
Yes.
Movie he has, yeah.
Which, of course, I'm sure we're going to talk about a little bit more, but I think... Specifically speaking of pre-implantation genetic diagnosis and screening and all of the terms that you alluded to, I think this is one of the most spot-on parts of the movie. But I remember thinking at the time that this was completely ridiculous.
Yeah.
I remember thinking like, oh yeah, we're going to be able to tell. That
and then rewatching in 2019, yeah. we're like, wow, this is what we do in a prenatal genetic counseling session.
This is yeah. absolutely what we're doing in fertility. Yeah.
Well, I was trying to remember if in the movie they go into specifics about how they chose the embryo itself. I don't remember
they do
how
not.
Specific they go
right.
into it.
And I think that almost helps the movie because it can withstand time a little bit better
mm-hmm.
by just saying we do this
yes.
and
yes.
not get into the particulars. And you would lose most of the audience because yeah. not everyone watching this are genetic counselors, so
they're not as much of nerds as we
yeah
are.
I suppose yeah. so, but yeah, I thought it was interesting that one of the quotes that the genetics expert or whatever we're going to call him meeting with the parents and explaining all this said this child is the best you could have ever created
mm.
and I think that is so impactful. I think when we were watching it we're like, wow, that's quite a quote.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
because they're saying like no matter how many kids they had naturally, they would never genetically compare to the child that they were somewhat creating.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much of it is really creating versus just choosing the best out of hundreds. But
and
interesting to hear
when
that.
When we're talking about the creepiness of this concept, when people think of this and it gives them kind of that weird feeling, that icky feeling, I think that quote absolutely hits on the reassurance part of it. That this isn't something engineered. It's not like we used CRISPR and edited this genome. It's not like we did anything like that, which is a whole other conversation.
That's a whole
other
show
for another episode.
I've done at least four on
sure.
CRISPR, so you can Google those.
Sure, but when it comes to pre-implantation genetic diagnosis and screening, I think that's a very reassuring thing for people who are going through that and feeling a little uncomfortable to tell them this is technically natural. We've just screened for the ones that are the best of your embryos.
But then at the end of the day, and I think it's something we're going to talk about a little later on, is like, who defines what's best?
Right.
What is
yeah.
the best? For like,
yeah.
it can mean different things to different people. Are we
yeah.
talking about a healthy child? Are we talking about advantages or traits? And even with traits themselves, like some people will admire some things more than others.
Yeah.
And I think that's something really interesting that is like, well, what's best here?
Yeah.
And I think then it kind of asks the question of like, what is the true goal of genetic perfection? Of, yeah, are you talking about just genetic diseases? Because Vincent's parents at one point say that they don't want to filter anything out but diseases.
Mm-hmm.
So looking at like, all right, what's the goal that we have here with this genetic perfection? Everyone's going to have their own idea of what that is.
Yes.
And then what the cost is on the other end. If we see what happens with Jerome Morrow's character arc and that he's supposed to be perfect, but he came in second and mentally that was just so hard for him to accept. And he ultimately doesn't really accept that with the end of the film.
Mm-hmm.
What I like about this is, like you mentioned, Vincent's mother coming in and saying, well, you know, we only really want to make sure he doesn't suffer, but we don't really want to enhance him. I think that echoes popular feelings amongst mm-hmm. Americans very well. I think that
they kind
concept,
of represent the general population.
They really do.
Yeah.
And I think that they kind of predicted that because at the time that wasn't something we were surveying people on. That wasn't something that was commonly spoken about.
Mm-hmm.
As
it's
far
a very
as I know.
Subtle like message
yeah.
that they really did project.
Yeah. And I think if you were to talk to people now today on the street, what their thoughts were about this kind of stuff, a lot of them would say, I'm not comfortable with enhancing, but I'm very comfortable with making sure they don't have diseases. I think any parent really wants to protect their child. And that looks different, like you said, Ale, for everyone, what they care about and what they don't. But I think they do a good job of showing her hesitation.
Yes.
And that not everyone in that early transition period when that technology was starting to be used was comfortable with it.
And I also like that they showed the other extreme of it with
mm-hmm.
The guy playing the piano.
Yeah.
That he was genetically engineered to have like the extra finger. And they're like, was that like how really? And it's like, well, you can play a 12-piece.
Yeah.
So like this only can be played with 12 fingers. But then at the end of the day, like, what else is there to it?
And yeah, the dialogue there was like, oh, 12 fingers are one. It's how you play. And then they're like, oh, but it can only be played with 12. And it's like, well, how much is like predetermined and how much is just like all the effort you put in? Yeah. And I think that's, it's that nature versus nurture that everybody talks about, but it's more of like, okay, what you're born with versus what you're putting into it. And like, are you really determined? So kind of twist that a little bit.
And while we're here, just while we're talking about these people who were genetically perfect, Jerome Morrow, in the film, he chooses to go by Eugene. He says, please call me Eugene.
Yeah, that's nice touch.
Which is impossible to take away from the fact that that really sounds like eugenics, right?
Definitely.
And so when we're having this discussion, it's impossible to separate out when we talk about genetic imperfection or imperfection. Are we talking about our history of eugenics? Are we talking about what a future that's eugenic could look like? Because here we have this person who is, like you said, genetically perfect or as close as he could be. And he was unhappy. He ultimately didn't achieve what he thought he was genetically predisposed to. He came in second place.
And another thing you mentioned before recording today is that just because someone's genetically perfect doesn't mean other things can't happen to them. Like accidents. I mean, what happened to him wasn't fully an accident, but accidents can certainly happen.
Yeah.
And,
you never know. I mean, accidents can happen. I mean, although we do know that cancer can, some people can have a predisposition to be or more propensity to them or not to cancer. At the end of the day, like, if you're exposed to something, you could develop cancer.
Right.
So, and that's something the movie doesn't really fully explore. Like, I guess they touch upon it with Jerome, you know, using a wheelchair and everything. But, yeah, not fully explored. Maybe a sequel someday.
Yeah, you never know.
But a really important part of the discussion when we are talking about moving towards the wide-scale use of pre-implantation genetic diagnosis and screening, it is that important caveat of, yeah, we're making you this likely to have all these traits, but it doesn't protect you against just inevitable accidents and the way the universe can go sometimes.
Right,
I think that's important.
Yeah.
And another factor that was talked about like during that scene, I think is so important when we keep talking about it, you know, when Vincent's parents are meeting with the genetics expert and figuring out the conception of their second child, they're really focused on the polygenic risk scores, which they don't identify it that way, but we know them to be called that today.
Yeah, so just a general definition of polygenic risk scores is a number based on variation in multiple genes and their significance to the trait at hand. It serves as the best way to predict whether or not someone will have a trait. And I think it's very important that we emphasize the word predict.
It's really looking at statistics more than anything, of like looking at what genes are playing a role in having a trait, such as a heart disease that we talk about a lot in this film because Vincent had a heart condition and everything like that. So it's interesting to see how they really do focus on it before its time. I don't know exactly when polygenic risk scores were started, but it certainly wasn't a buzzword like it is today.
Right. And I think it's hugely important because sometimes we think of genetics and we think of Mendelian traits and we think of one gene, one trait, right? Like this gene says whether the flower will be purple or white. But this is really moving away from that and recognizing that genetics is complicated and that many traits have to do with many genes and those genes are interacting with many other genes. So it's really our best way to look at how much we think these genes are influencing a trait. And it really is a prediction. Like,
and I think height's a good example of that because height has, I want to say, hundreds of genes that play a role in that, where something like having a widow's peak or like attached or detached earlobes is just one gene that's involved with that. So being able to understand what that means is, you know, all of these conditions like heart disease, like obesity, different things like that have so many genes involved, and that's why it's so complicated.
And like,
and it's not only the genes, you know, it's like they interact with each other, but it's also how the environment interacts with the genes and how your genes are responding to your environment. So that's something very important.
And that's hard to predict, right? That's a lot of statistical analysis and knowledge of genetics that frankly we're still trying to understand. But like you said, that's what the movie predicted and that's what's happening now.
It is, definitely. Yeah. We even have some people in our program doing a thesis project on it. So it's already happening. At the forefront.
Yeah.
And another topic that the film brings up is how laws can really prevent discrimination, genetic discrimination specifically, but also how they really don't in a lot of ways.
Right.
That laws that are set in place don't cover as much as maybe they should. I think one line from the movie was, "My real resume was in my cells," and just how everything mattered so much about someone's genetics and not about other things. And different terms that they came up with in the film, like degenerate and different things like that, where people were discriminated right away by being like, oh, you're an invalid versus invalid, even language like that.
Yeah.
That it's projecting a future that could possibly happen or different aspects of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this is super important. I know in the film they call it genoism or genoism.
Something like that,
kind of like, it's their term for genetic discrimination. And, you know, he makes that point to say that it's illegal. Genoism is illegal. And yet here you see this society that's so highly divided. And is it something that laws can really predict? I think there's so many parallels to this outside of genetics. When we talk about discrimination in society today, it's absolutely illegal to discriminate on many bases that we still manage to do today, whether that's employment,
college,
incarceration, college. Absolutely. There's all kinds of things where you see that there's no legal reason for this to be happening. And yet we still see that stratification in society. And I think they do a great job of showing how easily you can slide into that if protections are not where they should be in place. Yeah.
And one example of that was the legal drug test he does during an interview or something like that. And it turns into an illegal search of looking at their cells because you already have them. You know, like you have your genome based on this blood sample, urine sample, whatever hair sample they're taking. And that could definitely take place today. And maybe it does in some levels that we don't know about.
And I think some people, when they go like in genetic counseling sessions, you see that people don't realize the implications just having a simple test or a panel for like a cancer panel. And you're just talking to them like, before you do the test, I mean, there's things that you have to know, like what's in place protecting you, what's not. So, for example, it was very interesting to me to find out that they should get, like, for example, health insurance-wise, you should be protected in some way, but at life insurance, you're not.
Right.
And that you're talking about the GINA bill, Information Non-Discrimination Act of 2008, talking about covering some things, but not everything, and people not understanding that. And I think that's something that a lot of genetic counselors cover in their sessions to help people understand the legal side of things.
But jumping off of that, what I think Gattaca does so well is kind of showing how much society can place emphasis on forensics and law enforcement and kind of what would happen if we let law enforcement almost be unregulated with genetic information.
Scary thought.
Because that's what you see in the film, right? They start this investigation because of a murder that occurs and they sweep everything for every type of DNA. And at one point they even go to a party, they break up the party, and they're doing checkpoints while people are driving, and that you see that scene where Vincent, also known as Jerome at that point for his borrowed ladder, is taking his contacts out and trying to make sure that he doesn't get caught. At any moment, he is liable to be stopped and searched by law enforcement for his DNA, which is everywhere on him. And I think that's something the movie does really well.
And the film is kind of pointing to, we need more laws to help prevent this from happening.
Right.
It's kind of a foreshadowing. And, you know, we've seen, and who knows, maybe Gina kind of was based off that. Hard to say.
But I mean, we've seen, like, the Golden State Killer, that's how they catch them. It's a loophole in the testing system. And even though there we're talking about 23andMe or that type of testing, it's like, it wasn't like they took samples from the scene. But still, it's really interesting that in some way it is being applied right now.
Yeah. And we'll probably see more regulation as we go. And it kind of begs the question of, like, how much can we really protect our own genetic information on a more, like, personal level? Like,
well, you see that it's not just law enforcement, right? In the film, then.
This is a good, great scene.
Yeah. In the film, then, there's this fantastic scene where they kind of go up to this, it almost looks like where you would buy like a train ticket.
It's like a box office.
Yeah, it's like a box office. And she basically goes up to the window. They give her a cotton swab. She swabs her lips. And they say, well, how long ago did you get this sample? And she says, I kissed him 5 minutes ago. A real good one. And it's just so iconic where you realize this woman is having this potential mate, if you will, swabbed so she can sequence his DNA.
Which clearly there's no consent there in terms of having the swab happen.
Right.
In her mind, she's like, hey, I'm making out with him, gonna get a sample later.
Right.
Like,
make sure he's worth it. You know,
and then they use all these things we've just talked about, polygenic risk scores and whatever, to create this kind of arbitrary
number
analysis or number of how this mate could be for her.
Yeah, because when Uma Thurman comes up and she gives the DNA sample, and they tell her, oh, that's a good one, it's 9.6. So they literally give a number,
right,
a specific number out of 10 of how a great person or like a human being or whatever,
right,
subject,
right,
it is. So they're giving them a score out of 10.
Right, and something that's happening today that's not even as intense as taking someone's DNA, because that's a whole other story.
Yeah.
But something like using a direct-to-consumer test with your own DNA inherently is giving away your family's genetic information. And how much have you consented your family when you go and give your saliva to a company and they do your entire genome sequence? They have
Definitely.
A good amount of your first-degree relatives and even your second- and third-degree relatives.
They can
as
have
well.
Both of your parents in
right.
there, so.
Right.
Definitely. And one thing that I thought was interesting in that scene is when she, Uma Thurman, comes out with the report. It's
that's
like,
so
I don't know, it's one piece of paper that's like fairly long.
Yeah.
But I'm like, that was hilarious. Because we keep talking in this episode saying, wow, they got this right, this right, this right. They got this wrong.
Yeah.
They have it like,
right.
what, maybe 4 feet, 3 feet long. And in reality,
raw
a whole
data.
Genome. Yeah, because you could see the individual letters of ACTG.
Yeah.
And in reality, that would be a whole encyclopedia with like size 10 font. Like double
right.
space.
Right. It's not
like,
broken up
back
into
back.
Chromosomes. It's
right.
not broken. I mean, I'm sorry. Maybe we're bad genetic counselor students. But can you tell me what the, I don't know, let's try to make, CCG. Do you know what amino acid that codes for?
Can't say it off the top of my
no.
head.
Okay,
I'm not
and
a
now
biochemist.
If you put that amino acid next to a bunch of others, do you know
right.
what protein that
yeah.
codes for?
And how well that's going to fold
no.
and be a functional protein.
Maybe
oh.
maybe everyone in Gattaca's society is just quite
very
literate.
They
yeah.
could be. But, and it only took a few minutes
yeah,
to do a whole genome.
Like,
right.
Which just looking into it like it was nothing.
Yeah,
right.
that was, I was like, man, how many years in the future are we? Because, I mean, I suppose, you know, at some point in the future, you can do a whole genome in 5 minutes. But,
right, maybe that could happen.
I was like,
know.
Maybe she got like a simplified version of like what they consider the important.
Or they just print
right.
out like the
whole
the pathogenic variants.
Yeah,
or something.
Like okay, yeah, good eye, good side, good like.
Right, but I just wanted to point out something
yeah,
that
no,
the movie got wrong.
But that's
yeah,
one of
funny.
The very small points.
So small.
Where
yeah.
yeah, they really didn't age well, but
yeah.
everything else philosophically ages very well.
Yeah,
definitely. And yeah. I think one note to end on is that there was an alternative ending to Gattaca, which
right.
we just discovered doing a little research
right.
today.
Yeah.
How did it go, Catherine?
So I really want to watch it after this
yes.
because I haven't seen the full
disclaimer.
Thing put together. But I was just reading when I was looking up Gattaca that their alternate. I mean, it's clearly before we start. It's clearly mm-hmm. a warning. This is clearly a very philosophical film that, while some of their technology might not have aged perfectly. Philosophically, they're hitting on all of the points that we're talking about today,
mm-hmm.
and they're very unhappy about it. They're very negative about it. And so the alternate ending essentially shows these successful people, Abraham Lincoln, Albert Einstein, and John F. Kennedy. And then next to each of their names, it has their associated supposed genetic disease. I mean, none of this is confirmed as
far
as
I know. We can't go
back
and sequence Lincoln, but
right.
from clinical features.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people think that Abraham Lincoln was affected with Marfan disease, based off
Marfan
of how
syndrome,
he looks.
Right?
Marfan syndrome.
Sorry, yeah.
Thank you for catching
All
me.
Good.
I'm not sure. Albert Einstein, they think, had dyslexia. And then John F. Kennedy, again, I'm not sure if this is confirmed or not, but they show Addison disease, which has to do with the adrenal glands and not producing enough of the hormones it's supposed to, like cortisol and sometimes aldosterone. But they go and they show these highly famous people with this disease next to them, and they say if genetic testing had happened when they were born, these people wouldn't have existed.
Okay.
Yeah, especially
the
way
yeah.
they do in Gattaca, because it seems like, we don't know for sure, but like from understanding of that scene we kept talking about with
mm-hmm.
Meeting with like the genetics expert and Vincent's parents, that they're choosing the best embryo that's there. So if that was the case, yeah, those embryos
not
would not
right.
have been chosen.
Right.
Yeah.
And like you said, depending on, you know, what traits matter to the parents.
Mm-hmm.
Because maybe for some parents, oh, dyslexia, we can work through that. I'll spend a little extra time
yeah,
with him doing his homework.
But if you're dealing with something that you're going to require surgeries or require
mm-hmm.
medication for life, then it's something that you really think about and it's something that you would consider. And I think that's something that, as you said before, it's like people come and, like right now, are dealing with those decisions.
Yeah, that's already happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think the film withstands time and it's quite a masterpiece, I have to say.
It does.
Oh, yeah. I love that film. I think it's beautiful just
It's
to
probably
watch.
One of my favorites.
Yeah.
yeah.
And I like how they do, show you like all the ways it affects people, even like from choosing and dealing from the perfection of it, just dealing with the discrimination and how it creates even another class. So I think that's really interesting.
That it'll be interesting. Should we get back together in 22 years and record another episode?
Watch it again.
We're just like, oh man, they were right. Oh, you guys.
We can't do a genome in 5 minutes now.
They were right. They were right. Oof, that's kind of terrifying. A little side note, I like that the film talks about the individual versus the whole. We're not just talking about what are the implications of this for society. I mean, that's pretty obvious with the invalids and the valids and who can get jobs and who can't. But Eugene's character, who again, we talked about a little bit, but here he was so close to genetic perfection, and you just see in the end, does he really win? Does he really have a happy life, a fulfilling life?
I'm gonna say no.
Probably not.
It's those expectations. It's like dealing with those expectations of, because at the end of the day, who chose you to have those genes? It wasn't you, it was your parents. And you're dealing with this pressure of being perfect because someone created you to be perfect. And what does it mean if you're not satisfying those expectations? And that's tough. Like, even today, without dealing with the whole genetic thing, children that are put in classes since they're like 2, 3, 4 years old and pressured to being the best student ever, and they don't make it because
that race to nowhere with college.
Race to nowhere.
Exactly. Like, and this is taking it to another level. So yeah, that's
a real quick quote that they have on that note. That exact note is, no one exceeds their potential. If they did, it would mean simply we did not accurately gauge their potential in the first place. And I thought that's what really sticks out to me, right? So are these the kind of implications that we are bringing forward with pre-implantation genetic diagnosis? Maybe not right now. I think right now we can all agree that's not quite where we're at. But then again, these tests that are coming out predicting intelligence, predicting traits that really have to do with much more abstract traits. I think that's really interesting and terrifying.
I think as our databases grow with understanding variants and how we're classifying them as benign or pathogenic, we're going to be able to do a lot more of this. And so we need a lot more ethics committees to figure things out.
Because it's going to happen. Like, I think it is something that's going to happen. So we're going to be able to see the effects, like, in real life. And
Pretty soon.
Exactly. Definitely. So it's this concept of, like, how politics and laws are, like, have to keep up the pace of technology, and I think we're a little behind.
Definitely. Well, we could probably talk about this for another few hours, so I'll close out the show. Thanks for listening, guys. You can leave a review on iTunes or whatever podcast player you listen on. I would very much appreciate that. That's how a lot of people will find the show and listen, just like yourselves. If you want any information about the show, this episode, or the 100 other episodes I have, you can go to dnapodcast.com. I'm on Twitter at dnapodcasts. Instagram, a little different, at DNA Radio, posting pretty frequently on there. And any questions you have for the three of us can be sent into info@dnapodcast.com. I will forward them on to Ale and Catherine appropriately. So thanks again, guys, for listening, and join me next time to learn and discover new advances in the world of genetics.
The genes of you and me, the genes of you, and they're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.